morning, everybody. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Peter Sagal, the host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, is in town this week to play the role of the narrator in Leonard Bernstein's Candide. Maren Alsop and the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra are finishing up their current season with a semi-stage production of Mr. Bernstein's famous operetta. Full disclosure, I am the chorus master for this production, which features the Baltimore Choral Arts Society. Peter Sagal is no stranger to the stage. He's written a bunch of plays and screenplays, and he's worked as a stage director and actor. In 2007, he published a very funny book of essays called The Book of Vice, Naughty Things and How to Do Them, and Peter Sagal joins me in the studio. Good morning. Good to see you.
Nice to be seen. Hello.
So just as an example of the kind of hard-hitting questions we ask guests, I learned this from listening to your show.
Yes.
So Peter Sagal, are you having fun working with the Baltimore
Symphony? I'm having so much fun.
I'm so surprised.
Great. And the reasons are complex. First of all, as you say, I used to be a theater guy, but that was many, many years ago. And I had forgotten the pleasures of rehearsal. It's so much fun. You have attractive young people running around being theatrical. You have stage managers who are efficient and friendly and cater to your needs. Like, I need a highlighter. Here you are, sir. You have people putting, you know, like fitting you for costumes and putting wigs on, which in my case is a big thrill.
Right.
You know,
it is nice. I mean, your every whim is satisfied.
It's, well, not every whim, it's great fun. And I don't know anything about the symphonic music or the operatic world, and this is a combination of the both. And so it's very exciting to me. It's exciting to watch you work with a chorus. It's exciting to see Maestra. Does one say Maestra? Alsop?
Maestra.
Maestra is from Game of Thrones.
That's a whole other thing, right?
Yes. Maestra Alsop worked with a musician. She's very funny. She's got a dark sense of humor, I found out.
She does?
It's fun to work and talk with the young opera singers who are delightful.
And it's a wonderful cast.
Oh, they're amazing.
They sing beautifully and they're really fun.
It's very strange because if you're me, you walk into a room and you meet these very nice young people who you think are, you know, maybe they all seem to be in their 20s. And they're all, you know, attractive young people that you'd think are working in various businesses, or maybe they're newly minted lawyers. You have no idea who these people are. And then they start singing. And it's like, holy moly.
Yeah.
And they're so small. And it's like, it's all lung, apparently.
It is.
It's just lung. Crazy.
They are in their 20s, by the way.
I know.
They seem to be in their 20s because they pretty much are.
That would explain that. And it's funny because you think of opera as sort of this ancient art form, which is performed by elderly, chubby people pretending to be young. You know, we remember...
No more. They don't do it that way anymore.
Actual young, attractive people playing young, attractive people.
Of course, you're no stranger to a live audience and a stage. You do a live radio show or a show in front of a live audience.
Yes.
You know, for 17 years, once a week. But I wonder, do you find that you are making any adjustments in terms of, you know, how you're going to relate to the audience tomorrow night when we open?
Well, it's an interesting question because it's so different. Because our show, although it is a stage show, i.e. we're on a stage in front of an audience. In fact, we have been on the very stages that we are performing this operetta on, the Strathmore and the Meyerhoff Hall in Baltimore. But it's very different because our show is basically, you take a big mess of spaghetti, and by spaghetti I mean fart jokes, and you throw it against the wall and you see what happens. It's a very improvisational show. We don't really rehearse it. We run through a script. We furiously rewrite it. So if you've ever been to see Wait, Wait Live, you are hearing us do stuff more or less for the first time, improvising like mad. And that's the nature of our show, and I think it's part of our success. This thing, they rehearse.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to, learn what you're doing.
Right, and you've got a part. I mean, do you have to suppress the impulse to improvise? I mean, if you say something different, that can screw up a lot of things.
That's the thing.
Because people get cues.
I mean, I know.
The orchestra won't know when to play if you say a different line.
The director is a lovely man named Garnett Bruce. He's a wonderful opera director. He's on staff, I believe, in Baltimore. And I keep asking him, can I screw around with this? And the answer is always a really wonderful, friendly, qualified, encouraging no.
Absolutely not.
Because when I'm hosting my radio show and I decide to go on a riff, you know, comparing, you know, whatever's going on to, say, The Lord of the Rings, isn't Marco Rubio just like Frodo, I say, and much hilarity ensues. I wouldn't actually do that, but that's an example. It's fine. If I were to, like, go off script for a moment, then an entire orchestra worth of musicians will collapse in confusion, And Maestra Alsop will hit me with her baton, and we can't have that, can we?
Can't have that. No, because, you know, the things have to be timed, and there are cues that other actors are doing off of what you say, and the chorus is singing when you say a certain line,
yeah.
You're standing up when you say a certain line.
Although I will say this, is again referring to the actually legitimately young and attractive people playing the young and attractive people, that I was afraid that by being trained singers that they would be very much of that nature, like, no, this is something we've practiced and has to be precise. And I've discovered getting to know them that they are up for screwing around insofar as it is possible.
Yeah.
So there might be some screwing around.
Peter Sagal is my guest. He's, of course, the host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on NPR. He's also appearing as the narrator in Leonard Bernstein's Candide. It's a production that we're doing this weekend with the Baltimore Symphony on 88.1. It's Marilyn Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So your path into show business,
yes,
came through the theater, and you started as a writer, as a playwright.
I did. I wanted to be the great American playwright, meaning that I would write these amazing, hard-hitting plays that audiences would come to see and either be grateful for being told that their entire worldview was bankrupt or enraged for the same reason. And either outcome would have been acceptable to me.
Right. You take either one.
Yes, I would be. I wanted to destroy the complacency of the American public. And then I got older and I discovered.
And you needed a job.
Yeah, well, there's that. But if I can make it more of a philosophical journey, Tom,
sure.
Stay with me here.
Sure, go
stay
ahead.
With me here. Complacency is actually a good thing. I don't want anybody to interrupt my complacency. I worked hard to get it. I think complacent, I realize, is what unhappy people call happy people. So instead, what I do is I make fart jokes on public radio, which makes people happy. I don't shake anybody else's worldview or make them realize that their life is a lie. I give them an hour of amusement once a week, and that's not bad. That's a good way to spend one's life. We also serve who stand and make rude noises in the corner.
That's right. That's not bad at all.
I do love...
And it is a good living.
It's a nice
17
living.
Years you've been doing it.
17 years I've been doing it. Public radio, thank you for your pledges, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate them because they have gone to pay for food in my children's mouths. I appreciate, though, people who actually skipped the middleman and just pledged popsicles, which I then handed to my children.
But, much more efficient.
But I do miss the theater. There's something about, as we were talking about, a rehearsal hall and actors and performers and stage managers and schedules and preparation and rehearsal and improvisation within rehearsal and working problems out over a period of time and then working your way up to a performance that is really awesome.
And coming from the theater background,
yeah.
I mean, the radio thing aside, this, as you mentioned, is a symphonic, you know, sort of operatic milieu.
Yes.
They are different worlds,
well, say that too. Again. That was exciting.
Well, operatic milieu.
Milieu.
Oh, yes, oh, you like
milieu.
That.
That's
you break out into
yeah,
a
know.
Here, Peter.
I know.
That's good. I'm glad. I'm
you
glad.
Get to use all those French words.
That's right. That's
talk
right.
to me with those
oh,
French
Morticia,
words, Tom.
When you speak
yes,
French.
I know.
But those two worlds are very different.
Yes.
I mean, the vibe in the rehearsal rooms and the vibe in the shows even, I think you'll find it, are different. I mean, we mentioned this business about the script and not being able to improvise.
Yeah.
But are you finding that to be a brain adjustment you've got to
well,
make?
Well, absolutely, because, you know, it's very strange because you do a bit and then I have a role of the narrator. I've thought about this deeply. My motivation as a character is to narrate. And we're going over the material.
That's an insight, Peter.
I know.
And
thank
I'm,
you.
I'm glad
I worked
you
hard
got,
on
got
that.
To that
I have an acting coach.
That's right.
What's my motivation here?
That's right.
Well, I believe you want to tell the audience what the heck is happening.
That's right.
But it's interesting because, like I said, I never have a chance to do anything twice in my normal day job because we're just doing it and moving on. And this, we have a chance to go over it again. Well, is there a better way to do this? Is there a better way to inflect that line? Is there a way to make that funny? Is there a way to make sure that's not funny? Because if it's funny, it'll step on something else. And there's an element of precision and preparation and repetition that is sort of both exciting and challenging and very different for me. So I'm really kind of enjoying it.
How did Wait, Wait come to be? I mean, how does one grow up to be the funniest man in the minds of people who strap on their Birkenstocks and grab their tote bags?
Which
every
is a low
Saturday
point. You're about to say the funniest man in public radio, which is. Which
that,
is,
that, well, that's yeah. I suppose
I know,
that's not setting
bar.
The bar particularly.
It's a low bar.
But I mean, there weren't any funny
yeah,
men
it's
or
basic,
women in public radio prior to Wait, Wait.
It's,
really?
It's basically me versus Steve Inskeep, and I win.
Every
hear that,
time.
Steve?
Every time.
Absolutely. No, I need a better story. I need a story in which, you know, much like Will Shortz, who created his own major in college, I created my own major in Harvard and in game show theory and practice. And I sort of did my doctoral thesis on information, please, and I went forward trying to be the Monty Hall of a new generation. None of that is true. It's all made up. The short version is that back in the 90s, NPR wanted a news show for people to listen to on the weekend that would appeal to people to listen to the news but wasn't another news show. They came up with the idea of a news quiz. They hired Doug Berman, famed and successful producer of Car Talk, to come in and do it and give it some of that Car Talk verve, because that was a very, and is still, a very successful show. And I, somewhere along the line, was hired to be a panelist. I was originally brought in as a panelist, so when the first shows were broadcast in January 98, I wasn't the host, I was panelist. Peter Sagal joins us from New York. And then the show, well, let's say it's some growing pains, and they decided they wanted to make a change, and they asked me if I'd like to be host. I said, sure. And 17 years later, I'm sitting here talking to you.
How did they know to call you as a guest?
Somebody recommended me. Somebody I knew somebody who knew somebody.
It's that sort of serendipity of
I was caught in
happen.
The manner that, you know, a herring is caught by a trawler. I was just one of many people swept up. So when people ask me for career advice, I say, just sit around, do what you want, you know, fart around and wait for the phone to ring. It worked for me.
It works.
Yeah.
Know, sometimes it works.
I know.
You know, you can't,
dumb luck.
Can't argue with success.
Yes.
You know? But you're still writing. I read you in Runner's World
yes.
a lot. You know, you're a runner and you write for Runner's
I World. I write for Runner's World. I mainly do that because if you are a long-distance runner, and I assume you are if you read the magazine, the one thing you know is that nobody wants to hear you talk about running.
Right.
Nobody. Oh, wow. You know, funny story.
Except my another runner.
Exactly. Funny story. My nipples were bleeding the other day after a 5K. So what you need to do if you want to keep your friends and perhaps acquire new ones is you want to make sure that when you talk about running, you're only talking about it to other runners. Thus, when Runner's World said, hey, would you like to write for us? I was like, sure. So I can talk about things like nipples bleeding and other exciting topics of interest.
And we read it avidly.
Oh, yes. Right. Oh, it's another nipple bleeding column, people say. I love it when Sagal goes on about bleeding nipples. I probably said that phrase way too much for morning public radio, don't you think?
That's right.
I've set a record.
It's no longer a Dear Diary day here, Peter.
Okay, thank you.
Well, it's been a lot of fun.
So, it's been a delight.
And congratulations, you've answered 4 out of 5 questions correctly. So Carl Castle will leave the message on your answering machine.
Do you know, people ask me that. Does he do mine? I'm like, no, I've never won on the show. There are rules, people.
Peter Sagal, he is the host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He'll be appearing as the narrator this weekend in the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra's semi-stage production of Leonard Bernstein's Candide. Maren Alsop conducts the BSO, the Baltimore Choral Arts Society, in a terrific cast that features Keith Jameson in the title role, Lauren Snoofer as Cunegonde, and Judy Kaye as the old lady. We'll be at the Strathmore Hall in Bethesda tomorrow night and back here in Baltimore at the Meyerhoff for performances on Friday and Saturday night, as well as Sunday afternoon. Of course, you can catch Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock here on WIPR. Our website has all the details about Wait, Wait and the concerts with the BSO. Come on over to WIPR.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Lots more coming up on Maryland Morning. Stick around.